is under advisement, and we'll proceed to the fourth case, Larnick versus Hostmark Management. Mr. Novoselsky.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. Although the issues here are a little perhaps more prosaic than the preceding cases, they're extremely important to my client who was and continues to be injured. The bottom line here is I believe the trial court...
Before we get too far in, there's a potential question here of subject matter jurisdiction.
The brief says
that your clients are, quote, residents, close quote, of Wisconsin. Of what state are they citizens?
Your Honor, I believe they're also citizens of the state of Wisconsin. I know I
is
speak to him regularly.
That demonstrates that they are citizens of Wisconsin. I ask this because the Supreme Court has said that allegations of residence are insufficient. And if all the record contained is allegations of residence, we don't have subject matter jurisdiction.
Well, it's interesting, Your Honor. This case was originally filed in the state court and then removed.
You'd actually be delighted to have a new crack at the apple, huh?
If the court wants to simply say the district court had no jurisdiction, because then obviously the court could not affirm because the...
You know, my initial question was just whether the record establishes your client's citizenship.
I could fake it, Your Honor, but I frankly did not examine it. I did not examine it on that basis. I do know that all of my conversations with my client have taken place either in person or on the phone, in person here when he came in for conferences, but up in Wisconsin where we both live now. I've become a bunch of property up there, and I commute in now. It's delightful living on the lake. It's a little less money than here in Illinois. I honestly don't know, Your Honor.
I have a delightful place in Alaska, too, but I'm a citizen of Illinois.
I think I'd prefer to be a citizen of Illinois again because the taxes are less here. State income tax in Wisconsin is ridiculous, but I'm sure there are members. I think Judge Cudahy of this court made a comment on that once, too. He said the services are better up there.
We will ask your opponent, too, what the notice of removal alleges, because...
I believe it's a diversity.
Your opponent is the one who wanted to be in federal court, and even if an allegation of Wisconsin residence is perfectly fine for the Circuit Court of Cook County, which... I believe it is. I don't care where you're a resident.
It's not an issue for your court.
It's not an issue for a state court of general jurisdiction. But if your opponents allege domicile or citizenship or something of the sort, then we're okay. And perhaps you, with the understanding that this is something we will have to follow up on.
Judge, I would be delighted to have the court... I can't ask the court to find that the if there was no diversity, then the trial court had no jurisdiction to enter the order, which would be, I believe that falls under the rubric of I'll take a victory any way I can get it.
Sure.
On the other hand, Your Honor, I suppose the defendant's position as well, then what you should do is simply dismiss the appeal, which I don't think would be appropriate because it would go to the jurisdiction of the trial court
to hear the case. Right.
And candidly, I don't want to, one of the things I have to be is candid with the court as far as I know. And I agree with Judge Easterbrook, it's not an issue of what I know or what my client who is here could get up and testify to, it's what does the record reflect. The district court perhaps should examine, even on its own motion. Because it can't be waived, as I understand it. The parties can't confer diversity jurisdiction by agreement.
Since your time is short, let me ask you one question, which I think... If this is a hurdle that can be overcome, it's important. You state on a number of occasions that it was physically impossible for the accident that Mr. Galarnik suffered to have caused that first 12 inches of the mat to become loose. How are we supposed to do that?
Kind of the same way the district court found that there was no evidence of notice. If we have unrebutted testimony of the only person who saw it, that the bottom part was glued, the top part would come up, given the physics of what happened, if you will, I would suggest it's a jury issue. I think a jury could disagree with him, but for the purpose of a motion for summary judgment, the only evidence that you have is that the mat had either been loose or come loose
Does his testimony show that when he turned the shower on to get the water to a constant temperature, whatever he was doing, that the mat was lying flat?
He did not notice a defect in the mat. It's actually what he said is, and it's at pages 4 and 5 of our brief, is that he opened the shower, stepped into the tub with his right foot, and that's when his foot encountered the mat. Now, candidly, the client didn't perjure himself. It would have been nice to say, I looked down, I saw the mat, it was perfectly flat, it looked perfect to me, I just turned the water on, I put my foot on it, and went up. You know, I've seen over 30 years of doing this, I've seen people who have all kinds of marvelous testimony that one could look askance at, but this is fairly straightforward. He said, I don't see anything amiss in the tub, I turn the water on, everything looks fine, I put my foot in, next thing I know, and he doesn't really focus on the mat until he's laying there.
Do you argue anywhere that mats that are affixed so loosely that the force of a normal grown man's foot on it causes them to become loose are defective mats?
Well, I don't have to, because the hotel's own testimony is, in fact, if you look at the testimony of Daniel Sapp, that month he replaced, I think he said, 22 mats, which had become partially loose. Their own testimony establishes the hot water itself causes the mats to loosen up. You know, there's overwhelming...
And hence the front half of the mat, in your theory, is the one that naturally
which is closest to the... Right. In fact, if you look at Maria, I think Valencia is her name, she said sometimes just the water dripping in would cause the mat near the drain to become loose. She said what happens is the hot water causes the glue to loosen. Now, there's a picture in the brief, in fact, the front part of the mat, which my client, Mr. Glarnik, found loose, was the part nearest the drain. According to the testimony of their own maintenance personnel, this is typically where it would loosen up because of the hot water. This wasn't freakish or unforeseen, like some of the Illinois cases have distinguished it on. This is their own maintenance procedure. Periodically, Sapp said it. A minimum of 3 a month. This particular month, he replaced 22 of them. Ms. Valencia, who's a nice lady but who's paid, it's piecework, she was paid $20 a room, this particular day, she said, I went in and I checked everything. I also did 22 rooms that day. I did 4 extra because I wanted to make some more money. She also said, I don't speak English very well, so I don't note it when I'm supposed to note it when I replace these mats. See, this is a normal procedure. These mats come up because of precisely what we suggest caused the accident here. The nice thing about this, though, is Judge Lindbergh, had he been the trier of fact, perhaps could have construed the facts or made some inferences from this, but he wasn't. This is a summary judgment. And then, of course, he focuses on the notice issue, and very candidly, with all due respect to Judge Lindbergh, very nice man, I argued in front of him back when he was in the appellate court in Illinois, comes up with this theory that they have no notice, actual or constructive. They have tons of notice here. In fact, these mats come up, according to their testimony, virtually all the time. It's a normal operating procedure. These mats have a half-life, if you will. They also fail, the failure mode, if you will, and my client's a safety engineer, interestingly enough, I discussed it with him. If you look at Sapp's testimony, and Maria, who's a maid, this isn't rocket science, she figured it out too. You have a mat that's glued on a tub. Hot water causes glue to come loose. It must be rocket science just to figure that one out. She knew it. First thing she'd do is she'd look. If it was loose, she'd have it replaced, or she'd call down to maintenance because they'd come in, clean the glue off, re-glue it, and put it down. So I think on the note, there's no question here that there's more than adequate notice. The only other thing you could ask for would frankly be an admission from the hotel. So the only way to prove this case under the hotel theory would, yes, we have evidence, we knew it was loose, so we let our guests use it anyhow.
Well, maybe they have general notice. Was Judge Lindbergh focusing on notice that this particular room had a loose mat, or just that mats become loose sometimes?
I read the opinion, and he, I think he focused improperly on the Illinois Supreme Court case, Donahue, which talks not about, I know my time's running a little bit short here. He focused on the Illinois Supreme Court case to talk about foreign substances coming in and notice of the actual danger. This is a part of the structure. The hotel puts these materials in. And I think where Judge Lindbergh made a mistake is he looked at cases dealing with substances that come in from the outside, whether or not you had actual notice or sufficient time under constructive notice to learn of the danger and correct it. Here, they create the condition. This is an integral part of the tub. They put these mats on. They know they need to be replaced because they don't last forever. So we have something that's inherently, I don't want to say inherently dangerous, but perhaps, that if they're not maintained properly, they become loose and dangerous. They have a regular procedure to inspect and maintain. It's like the Hess case, which, in fact, I read it this morning, is one I did 20 years ago in the Illinois Appellate Court. The city of Chicago said, we had no actual or constructive notice of this defect, but they did have a maintenance procedure and an inspection procedure. And the appellate court there said summary judgment was appropriate against the city, since if you have a procedure to inspect and you fail to correct it, you're liable. Here, they had this procedure, they admitted it comes loose, and they dealt with it. I'll rest on the admission issue, other than to point out, I think Judge Lindbergh also was mistaken on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Novoselsky. Mr. Whitman?
May it please the court. My name is Jeffrey Widman. I represent the defendant, appellee, Postmark Management, Inc. I'll begin by saying I believe the notice of removal does allege citizenship in Wisconsin. In any event, I think the record in the form of Mr. Galarnik's deposition testimony makes amply clear that he is a citizen in the state of Wisconsin. Moving on, summary judgment. Our position.
Sure you want to move on. Where can we find these things?
I believe
a particular page citation that will establish citizenship in the sense of domicile.
I do not have that, no, Judge.
If you want the case to remain in federal court, perhaps you should do something to bring these to our attention.
The
appellant's brief alleges residence, and your brief says that the jurisdictional statement is complete and correct, which it is not.
I'd ask the court for leave to provide that information.
You may have 7 days to submit such information if it exists.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Novoselsky, should you wish to submit something in that 7-day period?
Did you want the court one submission
outside the record? No. Only if your examination of the record. I'm obviously offering Mr. Widman that opportunity, but if you want to examine the record and make some reflection within a 7-day period, you may do so. I'm not requiring that.
Okay. Thank you, Judge. Summary judgment here was proper for two simple reasons. Number one, there was no evidence that dangerous condition existed on the premises of the hotel. And number two, even assuming that Mr. Galarnik can clear this hurdle, there's no evidence that Hostmark had notice of this dangerous condition, as it must under Illinois common law and the Illinois Premises Liability Act.
Why aren't those both disputed issues of fact if we do have evidence that shows that these mats regularly require replacement, and so there's nothing about this room that shows that it's got, you know, an extra heavy-duty mat that's eternal. These are things that regularly require replacement. We have eyewitness testimony that there's a particular dislodgement of the mat in Mr. Galarnik's room. Now, that would be contested by other witnesses, but he was a competent witness to testify that the first 12 inches became dislodged, which means that it was at best loose. Maybe it was barely attached, maybe it was completely unattached, but it was loose, according to his testimony, the kind of thing that when a man steps in, people step into showers. I mean, that's the intended use of a shower, I assume. That's why you bother to have a hotel room. So I don't know why we don't have facts in this case that somebody needs to resolve.
Judge Wood, when the evidence shows the condition existing after the incident.
And also circumstantial evidence about before. I agree with you that his testimony is an after-the-accident kind of testimony. But it leaves me thinking, well, either this means that mats are so loose that people who get into Postmark's bathtubs ought to be really careful because they're going to the force of their foot touching the mat is going to cause it to slip. That's your theory, I guess, that when somebody's foot touches the mat, it slips. Or we can take from the other evidence about the effect of hot water, the number of mats that are replaced, this particular mat was a loose one. That's why the accident happened.
It may or may not have been. There's simply no evidence to establish what the condition the mat was in just before the incident. And coupled with the fact that Belia Valenciano inspected the mat the day before, testified that she always pulls on the mat to tug them to make
the
sure that...
The whole thing?
Yes.
These mats are really big.
They're not that big. They're about this big.
Suppose she was tugging at it from the end of the tub away from the faucet. Even this mat wouldn't have moved.
Well...
Because it was only the first 12 inches.
The mat's only about 18 inches long, first of all. But second of all, she also testified that she scrubbed the entire mat. Those two facts...
Except we also have testimony that shows that some mats are dirty and mildewed, but they don't get replaced.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Well, so how hard does she scrub?
Well, they get...
It doesn't make me very attracted to the idea of these mats.
Even if she does a poor job the day before, even if she doesn't scrub very hard, and even if she doesn't tug on the mat the day before, it doesn't show that Hostmark had noticed that the mat was in this dangerous condition. What Mr. Galarnik's arguing is she did a poor job the day before. She's not owning up to the fact that she did a poor job the day before. Therefore, it must have been loose, and the hotel must have had notice of it.
Well, and I think he's also arguing that if his act of putting his foot in the tub was enough to make the mat become loose, we already have a problem with the mat. Right? Your theory is that it was his fall that made the mat become loose, not the mat that made him fall.
Our theory is there's no evidence of what caused the fall. And he's failed to meet his burden of proof in establishing what caused the fall.
Well, he testifies to physical steps that he took. He's competent to do that, isn't he?
He also testified that he ran the water for a few minutes.
Sure.
It certainly doesn't show that this condition existed for a long enough period of time to put the hotel on notice that this dangerous condition existed. It could have come loose at any point. We don't know when it came loose. We dispute that it came loose at all, to be honest. But you can't
do that now,
right.
As you know, yeah.
But looking at the facts in the light most favorable to Mr. Galarnik, the only way he can establish notice of this dangerous condition is by showing that it existed for a long enough period of time that the hotel knew or should have known about it. And he hasn't shown that. What he's trying to do is bootstrap the condition of the mat by using Belia Valenciano's inspection 24 hours earlier.
Is there any expert evidence in this case on either side dealing with how these mats work or how the glue works?
No.
To figure out how stable this glue is and what kinds of force would displace it, seems to me you need an engineer, not a housekeeper.
Which is why Judge Lindbergh said it is equally likely that...
Well, I don't know whether it's equally likely or not. That depends on what somebody who actually knows how this technology functions might say. Your brief is full of statements about what's likely, but they have no empirical basis that I can tell. Of course, the plaintiff's brief is equally, fact-free in that sense.
Respectfully, Judge Easterbrook, we do not set forth our theory as to what caused the fall. It may have been a loose mat, it may have not. There's a complete absence of probative facts on that issue.
But Judge Easterbrook is talking about not what caused the fall, but what are the characteristics of these mats. And, I mean, that's why I initially asked Mr. Novoselsky, the statement is made, it would be physically impossible for the accident to have occurred the way you say. I want to know why. And it's the same kind of engineering or physics
right.
issue, if you will.
You at least have the benefit of the fact that your adversary has the burden of persuasion.
Right.
But your brief is full of assertions, essentially, about the way in which these mats work that have, as far as I can see, no basis in the record. They may be true, they may be false, but they don't have any basis.
Respectfully, Judge, I don't believe we set forth any arguments as to the way that these mats work. All we're arguing is that Mr. Galarnik has failed to show that the hotel, that number one, the mat was in a dangerous condition, and number two, that it was in that dangerous condition for a long enough period of time to give the hotel notice of that dangerous condition. And the only way he can do it, and the only way is to show how long it was in that condition. And all he's doing is saying, well, Ms. Valenciano may have done her job improperly.
But he can't, no, I don't think that's the only way he can show it. I mean, we know that these mats need replacing. 22 of them or so are replaced in a given month. So he's shown that there comes a time that the hotel itself decides that it doesn't want to put people in rooms with mats that are no longer securely attached to the tub. And so I hope that's what the hotel is doing. And what I'm concerned about is in this record, you seem to think that unless somebody sends, you know, a private investigator to a hotel to check out the room that he's going to stay in a month before he goes and then goes to the room, he won't be able to meet the burden of proof that you believe the plaintiff has. I don't think the law requires him to do that.
The law requires him to establish how long the mat was in that condition, and given the fact that the hotel inspected these mats daily and there was no evidence that there was anything wrong with this mat the day before the accident, we submit that they have failed to establish any question of fact that the mat was in a dangerous condition or that the hotel had notice of.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Your time is expired. You may have a minute if you wish.
I think, Judge Wood, you've put your finger on it. What they're basically saying is if we don't admit, we don't have something in our record showing that we knew the mat was loose, you lose. Otherwise, you're correct. The plaintiff would have had to say, you know, I looked, I saw it was loose, but I got on anyhow, which would make them very stupid.
Let me ask you the same question about expert testimony.
There is.
We have in the record the testimony of the housekeeper that she inspected the mat and it was fine. Now,
yes.
I assume that you could try to oppose that with expert testimony saying this accident couldn't have happened if the mat were fine. Is there any such evidence around or anything looking
no,
like
there
it?
Was no. First of all, we have more than that, but you're correct, sir. We did not bring
but
in
then
an expert.
Then the critical question is, what would be the basis for an inference by the jury that the accident, that the mat was actually loose?
There are several.
Given the testimony of the housekeeper that she inspected it and it was firmly fixed.
First of all, we have her testimony that she checked, but she didn't say she checked at all. But let's go to Seep for a second. Seep, both the housekeeper and Seep describe the mechanism of how these do come loose, which is consistent with Mr. Galarnik's testimony. The front part would normally loosen because
I understand that, but she also said that she inspected it and it was firmly fixed.
If the jury accepts the credibility of her testimony, which they can reject, or they can accept it.
At the summary judgment standard, we have to assume that every witness is telling the truth unless there is a reason to doubt it. And the question I'm trying to pursue with you is what reason is there to doubt that this witness was telling the truth?
The testimony of Mr. Galarnik, because her testimony and his testimony are mutually exclusive.
No, that's the question. For all we know, they're perfectly compatible.
They may be, but then you have to assume that it was when she checked it, the front end was in the process of loosening, which would be consistent with
Seep. That depends on how much force it takes to separate this mat.
Right. But here's the problem. Immediately after
somebody
the
could tell us not only first how much force it takes to separate a properly glued mat,
right,
and second how much force your client's foot could have applied.
Except here's the problem.
Those are engineering questions.
Yes,
we should get answers to them.
And if that's correct, then let's say it's properly glued, he steps on it, and the force of his stepping on causes it to come loose. Who is the one who put it in using what's inherently bad glue to begin with? Postmark. It's somewhat, what their argument is he caused it by stepping on it. Judge, you're correct. The jury could, for summary judgment purposes, you have to take it's true that when Mr. Galarnik looked down, he saw the front end loose. We take that as true, just as we take as true that Maria Valencia said the day before it was glued down. You then have to assume either that Mr. Galarnik is lying, and you're correct, the trial judge couldn't do that, or that the force of simply stepping on it caused it to come loose, in which case, who put the mat there? The hotel. Who glued it? The hotel. Who chose the bad glue? The hotel.
What makes you think it's bad glue?
Well, it didn't just happen, because then we have, depending Judge Wood pointed out, you have them putting mats in where if you step on them in the normal course of stepping on them, they come apart.
No, look, that's like saying that a surgeon performs an operation and the patient dies, that proves negligence. There are error rates in all human activity. We would like to know what the normal error rate is for putting in mats, and maybe whether these mats exceeded that error rate. But just observing that an accident occurred doesn't show anybody is negligent.
Except here, since they're the ones who created the condition. I would agree with you. They could have brought in an engineer to say that...
The plaintiff has the burden of persuasion.
I think the plaintiff did here, because the plaintiff established that the accident was caused by the mat coming loose. The plaintiff also brought in evidence from the hotel that when the mats began to loosen, they would replace them. He brought in evidence of the mechanism that causes them to loosen, which is the normal course of putting water in the tub, which is the purpose of the tub, is to put hot water in it. You have everyone from the hotel who acknowledges it. Then you get to the admission where the engineer couldn't do anything because the hotel comes in, removes the loose mat, says this is bad, this is our fault. You have later then to say, well, by the way, now that the evidence the engineer would need to look at has been disposed of, now that we've removed the glue and re-glued a mat, let's now bring in an engineer 3 years later to testify, because, Judge, you're correct. Let's say you have an engineer comes in and says, under normal circumstances, this is the force you'd need. I'd be faced with a Daubert-Fry, well, Illinois Supreme Court now says Fry, they don't like Daubert, or a Kumho argument saying, that's interesting, but you can't go out and look at the actual mat. It's been destroyed. And it was destroyed when they took the evidence under their custody, removed it, and replaced it. So we're basically saying that no plaintiff can ever prove a case, because the engineering testimony that Your Honor suggests, and perhaps, by the way, had they not said to him it's our fault, he's a safety expert. He would have brought in somebody immediately. He would have said, don't dispose of the mat. Don't touch the premises. I want to bring in an expert to look at this, which is why the admission issue comes back, because they told him, don't worry about it. It's our fault. The insurance company pays his bills. And then years later, for the first time, they say, oh, by the way, where's your evidence? Where's your expert? Or, and by the way, if you look, one thing I did want to point out, I apologize, because my time is up. First page of the memorandum opinion says, Plaintiff Timothy Galarnik, I should say plaintiffs, and Tony Galarnik are residents of the state of Wisconsin. So the court based it on residents, apparently, not citizenship.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Woodman. Case is taken under advisement. The court will proceed to the fifth.